With Thanksgiving behind us, I'm sure you're all thinking about the greatest time of the year that's right around the corner. It's March Madness! There's nothing quite like sitting on the couch for 14 hours straight, experiencing everything from candied yam time to watching a breakaway layup get stuffed like a Thanksgiving turkey. The NCAA loves the money they bring in from March Madness, so they expanded the college football playoff from 4 teams to 12 in an attempt to instigate exponentially more madness, and boy, were they successful. The implications of football conference champ week have never been higher, and everybody from Oregon to UNLV could be on your TV come 2025. We'll break it all down for you right here on Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM. Roll the music, let's talk some ball.
This is KTRU on 96.1, KTRU, LP, Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice University athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You can listen to us every Thursday at 10 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, make sure to go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have a question for our staff, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Throughout the next hour, you will be hearing from a whole team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges, here at Rice University. It is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest moments from the past week at both Rice and in the city of Houston. We're going to kick it off with some Rice women's volleyball. They headed the weekend before Thanksgiving, actually, when we were last with you, they headed to the American Athletic Conference volleyball tournament. They matched up as the number 2 overall seed against number 7 seed North Texas. They swept them on Friday, a week before Black Friday, and then in the next game lost by a score of 3-2 to the number 6 seeded FAU Owls. Their Owl counterparts went on to lose in the championship game after defeating South Florida, and Wichita State took down FAU in the title game. Rice did not get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament, which we thought they had a chance of doing with our despite our lackluster volleyball knowledge. So that will bring an end to their stellar season, and they will finish at 19-8 and 13-3 in the conference. Great showing there from Owl Volleyball. The Owl women were also making noise on the women's basketball court. They played a perennial tournament team, Gonzaga, and dropped that game by just 3 points, 72-69. This is a sneaky good loss, I think, for the Owls. Like, Gonzaga has been in the tournament the last couple years. They've played really high caliber opponents. They played really high level basketball. I think that game overall was a great showing from Rice. Haley Adams led the way with 20 points and 9 rebounds for them. They later dropped in the Cancun Challenge to BYU by a score of 63-51. Haley Adams again had the most notable stat line of 6 points, 13 boards, and 4 blocks, although that was a bit of a tough game for the Owls. They rebounded well, though, still in Cancun, took down the Catamounts of Vermont by 22 points, 79-57. Victoria Flores led the way off the bench, dropping 18. Klosek and Dominique Ennis both had 17 and 14 respectively, but Haley Adams didn't miss out. She made some noise in that third game as well, dropping 7 points and 9 boards. She has definitely been the most consistent player for the Lady Owls over the last couple weeks. She is your star to keep an eye on if you're looking for one player on the women's basketball team. The Owls women are now 5-3 on the year. They will take on the Trailblazers of Utah Tech on Wednesday night, which is between the time we record this and the time it airs. So the result of that game may already be known to you when you are listening to this on Thursday morning. Keeping it on the hardwood, the Rice men's basketball team, a few weeks ago when we were last with you, beat Houston Christian by just 3 points. Trey Broadnax had 19, and the Owls were up 1 with 15 seconds left when Kellen Amos hit a pair of free throws to extend the lead, and HCU missed a 3-pointer as time expired. The Owls rebounded the ball, but the box score read zero. So it was basically a buzzer beater attempt. Very dramatic game there. They then went to the Baja Mar Hoops tournament, where they dropped their first game in overtime against the Hofstra Pride. Their leading scorer was again Trey Broadnax with 16. That was not the best game from the Owls, but they rebounded well and took down the Red Wolves of Arkansas State 75-67. Broadnax was again the leading scorer with 18. Kellen Amos had 17, and six different players recorded a bucket off the bench. Nice showing there from the Owls, showcasing their depth. They went on to take on Iona in their last game of the Baja Mar Hoops tournament. They won by 4, 70-66. Broadnax again led the way, 16.7 boards. Caden Powell did not miss out, recording 14-7. The Rice Owl men are 7-2 on the year. Their next game is on the road in San Marcos, Texas, where they will take on the Texas State Bobcats. That game is on Sunday at 2 p.m. Central Time. You could catch it on ESPN+. Moving over to the tennis court, Arthas de la Batissiere and Kabir Kapasi represented Rice in men's doubles in the NCAA tournament. They dropped in the round of 32, their first match, unfortunately, by a score of 6-2, 6-4, versus Luciano Tacci and Luca Pau from Wake Forest. Shout out the Demon Deacons. The game was deceptively competitive, though. Both sets were tied, the first one at 2-2 and the second one at 4-4, before the Owls were just unable to close that one out. Tennis is a bit of a year-round sport with a variety of tournaments, so we will keep you posted as more tennis events are happening on both the men's and women's side. Perhaps in the biggest news, though, for Rice Athletics has been the gridiron. The football team suffered a tough defeat against UAB by a score of 40-14, but rebounded on senior day and won by a score 35-28 against the Bulls of South Florida. This is, if you've listened to us over the course of the last few weeks, the exact opposite of what we all kind of forecasted would happen. We thought that UAB game was a given win and that USF was going to be a tough one. But nonetheless, Rice football is going to finish 4-8 on the season. And Rice will announce their new on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Rice announced a new head coaching hire, Scott Abel, and we are going to break down the implications of that for you. So we're going to send it over to Julian and Brandon for a deeper dive onto Rice football.
Thank you so much, Ian, for the wonderful recap. As always, here we have me and Brandon on K-True against the Grain 96.1 talking about Rice football's new hire, Scott Abel, coming in from Davidson after Rice decided to fire Mike Blumgren after, you know, following his underwhelming time as head coach. So, Brandon, how about you give our listeners just an overview of what we can expect from this hire, maybe how you feel about it personally, just some general information on it.
Sure. So the first thing I want to go over is kind of his record at Davidson, right? So the Wildcats had six consecutive seasons with two or fewer victories, and then went winless in conference play in four of the previous 5 years before he was hired. He immediately brought a winning culture back to the program, going 6-5 in 2018 and delivering a winning record in each of his seven seasons as Davidson's head coach. He was an FCS coach at Davidson, so they won the Pioneer Championship twice, and he won the Pioneer Coach of the Year twice, while also making three FCS postseason appearances. So a lot of these stats sound really good, on the surface, but then you dive in a little bit deeper and it tells a little bit of a different story, right?
Okay.
So in 2020 and 2021, those were the years that they won the conference championships. And both of those years, well, they had obviously good seasons because they won the conference championships. 2020 was a shortened season, right? So they went 4-3 overall, and they were still able to win the conference championship.
Oh, that's crazy.
And in 2021, they built off what they had done the previous year, going 8-3. No issues with that, right? But then you kind of look what he's done in the last few years. Last year, or this year, he went 6-5, going 4-4 in conference play, and they were tied sixth in the standings, right? And the year before that, they were third, but they were 7-4. And it's kind of just, at least from my perspective, an interesting hire, because obviously he's an FCS coach with no FBS experience at all. He's never coached at the FBS level, not as a coordinator, not as a position coach, nothing. So I think it's kind of interesting to go this route, especially when the coaching carousel hadn't really even begun, because the college football.
Right, sort of premature decision, one might be able to argue,
yeah. So, like, during the press conference and stuff, it was kind of talked about how, like, there were over 30 coaches looked at both the NCAA and NFL level. But I think when you, like, really break this down, a lot of the coaches that you'd be looking at during the season might not be, like, the cream of the crop, right? Like, the coaches that are on competitive teams and in a position to win now are not going to be interviewing in the middle of the season. That's just not how it works. So I think it's definitely interesting that we waited so long to fire Blomgren and then so quickly decided to hire Abel.
Yeah, interesting. Almost as if they wanted to, like, give the image that there was, like, stability in the program, but not actually thinking about, like, okay, maybe we could wait until the end of the season and get someone who might be a better fit. Is that basically what we're what you're thinking here?
Yeah, but I do see the one thing I will say is a benefit for it, which we kind of saw today, is because today's National Decision Day, a lot of players, like, make their decisions today. And we saw 12 players commit to Rice.
Wow, okay.
And that might not have been the case had we not had a head coach, because the unpredictability of if a new coach comes in, if you're going to have a playing spot, X, Y, and Z. But I just overall think it's kind of a rushed decision.
Okay.
Because there were certain coaches, especially within top teams right now. For example, Oregon's tight end coach. He's a Rice alum, right? Like, not to say that he would have definitely came here, but, like, the chances that we interviewed him at all are very slim, considering they're the number one team in the country. Like, he would not be leaving in the middle of the season, right? Mm-hmm. And that would have been, like, a dream coaching hire. So to not even put yourself in a position to talk to the high-end coaches, that, not to say they definitely would have came here or that we would have even wanted them to come here, but to not put yourself in a position to at least talk to them, I think could be a mistake.
Okay, interesting. So we don't have a fan of maybe not the hire itself, but maybe the timing of the hire from our own Brandon Brachia. So what could we say then, you know, if you had to look at it from the opposite perspective, what do you think Rice saw in Coach Abel that should give us optimism for next season? Because, you know, it's been a long time. It was a long time that we had Bloom in there at coach, and, you know, even just a new face in there, new vision, new voice, could be something to revitalize a program. What do you think they were looking at when they made this decision?
Well, I think you look at how he turned around Davidson, right? Like, at the end of the day, obviously, I'm not nitpicking, like, the wins and losses and, like, the years that they won conference championships, but it's still very impressive, like, to go winless in your conference for 4 out of 5 years and then immediately come in and have 7 straight winning seasons.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Like, you can't really deny that.
Yeah.
In addition to that, like, there's a clear commitment to continuing to be an academic football program. There were kind of discussions that we might potentially drop a lot of the academic requirements to maybe attract a better, higher-end coach. But it's clear, especially after the press conference that he gave, that that idea of being one of the top academic football programs is not going anywhere. Okay. And that we want to continue, like, this idea of academic excellence.
Yeah, we can always take pride in that at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Right? And not that – there are definitely advantages to it as well, as we've seen in – recent years, where it's almost the backdoor way to get in the bowl games, because one of the tiebreakers for 5-win teams is academic standings.
Yeah.
So if there aren't enough bowl eligible teams, sometimes it's deferred to Rice.
Okay, gotcha. So it's an interesting overview that you've given us. Give us a quick, maybe 1 to 2 sentence prediction for how. Do you think the team will look like, you don't have to say a record necessarily, but how do you think the team's going to look like next year, if you can say anything?
Well, I think there's definitely going to be some growing pains, right? Like, this is obviously a big change, bringing in a new head coach. We're still not sure if our defensive coordinator and other coaches are going to stay. they were offered positions to stay. So it could be interesting how that unfolds. So we're kind of waiting to see like who the offensive coordinator is going to be, who the defensive coordinator is going to be, stuff like that. But honestly, Rice ended the season pretty strongly, going 2-2 with the interim head coach. I definitely think there is a possibility to like not pick up where we left off, but to build on like what we've been able to do, like winning our last game of the season, like against the team that is going to a bowl game. I think that there's definitely moments to be proud of. And if we can continue to build off this momentum, and if he can bring a winning culture to Rice, like there's going to be no qualms from anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then all we can say now then is go Owls and wish our football team and new coach Abel the absolute best. Thank you, Brandon, for the wonderful insight on Rice football. And now I'm going to toss it over to our own Miss Chloe Singer.
Before we get into our game for today, we have a quick promotion for our other Rice shows here on K-True. K-True's Rice Radio Reggae takes listeners on a tour of some of the many facets of reggae music, from the roots reggae made famous by Bob Marley to instrumental dub, dance hop, and more. A word to describe K-True is eclectic, and Rice Radio Reggae follows suit, with songs in each set moving from one style to another, and often one country to another. Every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m., K-True's Rice Radio Reggae. Give a manatee gift adoption from Save the Mandy Club. 34 real Mandys are up for adoption in their Adopt a Manatee program. Funds help with education and conservation efforts. Each person who adopts receives a full-color photo, biography, adoption certificate, and more. Call toll-free at 1-800-432-JOIN-5646 or visit SaveTheManatee.org.
Welcome back, all you iPad kids. We are here once again with more sports brain rot. Today, we are going to be running back Guess My Player, but with a twist. So in case you forgot, this is a sports variant of games you may be familiar with, like Guess Who and 20 Questions. And our two contestants today will be taking turns asking each other yes or no questions and attempt to narrow down their options, as the first one to correctly identify their opponent's athlete is our winner. We threw some restrictions on it this week to keep it college football playoff themed, so each of our two contestants, Julian and Brandon, selected a current NFL player who attended a school that is currently projected to be in the college football playoff. So the way we define that is the top 12 ranked teams, but my Arizona State instead of Miami, because that would be the 12 that were in the bracket if the season ended today and they used the current ranking and all the conference championship assumptions that the committee put forth. So once again, Julian and Brandon will be our contestants, and I'm going to kick it to Julian to ask his first question.
All right, perfect. So Brandon, did your player, was your player on a playoff team last year?
Yes.
Okay.
Was your player on a team that is currently in the top five in the college football playoff rankings?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Does your player play in the playoffs last year? Or no. Does your player play in the AFC?
Yes.
Okay.
Does your player play on offense?
No. Okay. From last year's playoffs to now, has the player changed teams?
No.
Okay.
Does your player play in the AFC?
Yes. One moment as I'm taking a couple of notes. Let me think of something. Does your player play on offense?
No.
Okay.
Does your player play on a team that is currently top three in the college football playoff rankings?
Yes, he does. Okay. Gotcha. Let me look back. So your player does not play on offense and plays in the NFC or in the AFC and was in the playoffs last year. Okay. Did your player go to an SEC school?
Yes.
Okay. So that's Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, and Alabama right now. Okay.
Does your player play on the defensive line?
No. Okay. This is tough. You said not on offense, though. Okay. Oh, okay. So I was thinking Pat Surtain, but Broncos obviously didn't make the playoffs last year. Alabama alum, of course. Does your player play on special teams?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. We're getting somewhere.
Does your player play on special teams?
Yes, he does. This is a crazy coincidence. All right.
Okay, so just I'm going to jump in as MC here. We know that we've asked a few similar questions, a few different questions. Both of our contestants have special teams players, of all things. They were both on AFC. They're both on AFC teams right now. And we know that Brandon's player went to an SEC school, and we know that Julian's player was on a top three college team. So both of our contestants have made a similar amount of progress, but in slightly different ways. So let's kick it back to Julian.
All right. Did your player play for Texas?
Yes.
Okay.
Is your player Justin Tucker?
No. Yes, it is. It is. But I went first, so that's it, right? I don't get redemption.
You unfortunately do not. Brandon wins with his Justin Tucker poll. Though for the listeners do you have a guess?
I was going to, if it's not also Justin Tucker, which would be crazy, I was going to say Dicker the Kicker.
It was Justin Tucker.
It was also Justin Tucker. Also, the Chargers didn't make the playoffs last year. That was a dumb guess. That's crazy. We both got the same player.
It was pretty funny.
on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
There. Look at that. All right. Fair play.
So both of our contestants selected a kicker. How about them apples? And even then, they selected the same one. For those of you who are not in the studio, Chloe and I had a really hard time not just breaking out cackling through them recording their breakdown of Rice Football's new coaching hire that you heard, because she sent me a message telling me that they both selected Justin Tucker, and that was hilarious information to receive as the host of today's game. But that is going to do it for our game. Hopefully you enjoyed that slightly strange but nonetheless entertaining experience. We are headed now, I believe, to break down the college football playoff as a whole more in depth for you and talk about a few of those teams that we may have just mentioned and their current rosters and how they stand as we look towards the new year and the end of the college football season.
Let's jump into it then. All right, so Max, you start us off then. What are our thoughts on the, you know, big Georgia guy over here, I guess? What do we think then?
Are you a Georgia fan?
Yeah, go Dogs for sure.
Okay. Go Dogs.
I'd like to start by saying I am really liking this new format. I like it better than the four team, by a lot. I think especially this season with all the competitiveness, there's no like Alabama super team or a Georgia super team that really stands out to me. And I think that's going to make for a really great 12-team playoff, whereas a 4-team playoff, I think we'd be a bit more confused on who should be included and where teams stand in terms of the rankings. Like, I think you could pick apart what the committee did with this top 15, top 10, even top 5. So I think having this bigger pool of teams is going to make for greater entertainment, and it's better that we're getting to include all these teams.
FSU are still crying from last year. I can hear it all the way from here.
They keep crying. They lost 63-3.
I know.
And they played no starters.
Like, I know Brandon is going to jump in here and defend the 4-team format a little bit more, I think. But
I just think 12 is too many.
12 is too many.
I think they could have gone away with 8, maybe.
Yes, that's the whole thing. It just devalues like all the games. You're going to see a 3-loss Alabama team getting to the playoffs. That should not be the case. You should not lose 3 games.
Not a Jalen Milroe believer over there.
It devalues games. Like, teams that aren't even in their conference championships are like Ohio State, for example. Like, not to say they shouldn't be in there, but like, to be a lock is crazy. It's insane. Like, they lost to Michigan.
I think the one thing that I really like that 12 offers, maybe as opposed to like an 8-team format would have, is that you see a lot more like less traditional teams or less traditional football powerhouses that are going to get their shot. Like, if we're in an 8-team format, no one's talking about putting a Boise State in there. Like, SMU is a lot more of a bubble team. We're definitely not seeing UNLV if they pull off that upset. We might not be seeing Indiana. It was like, those are all really fun teams to watch that I think all have like a chance to like play with teams that we would all agree like definitely should be in the playoff. And I think if we're in an 8-team format, or especially a 4-team format, we're never going to see that. And the college sports purist in me loves kind of seeing that diversity of kind of program history.
Imagine the scenes when Ashton Gentry wins the Heisman and the national championship with Boise State.
It's going to be phenomenal.
They better beat UNLV.
If we have Colorado fans listening, they probably didn't like that, but...
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, Prime. I'm sure you're listening to Against the Grain right now. But, okay, so do we have... Well, we already know Max's favorite, so we don't need to ask him. But do we have favorites here? You know, teams to watch out for, I guess?
We were talking about this a little bit off-air. I think Notre Dame is kind of in a... Their path could shape out really nicely if they get that 5-seed slot. Because right now they're number 4... in the like actual ranking, but because all 4 of those first round buys go to conference champions, Notre Dame is not going to get that as an independent in football. So they're probably going to be like a 5-seed or a 6-seed. I think right now the bracket that we have in our doc has them as a 6-seed, but that's kind of where they've been slated the last couple weeks pretty consistently. And I think since they're not playing in a conference championship, like, I wouldn't expect that to change very much either. And I think that they're going to get to match up with an 11-seed or a 12-seed. So they're going to get a team like a Boise State or an Indiana or a 3-loss Alabama. Like, they're going to get it's called football playoffs. Everybody's good, but they're going to get a, like, in air quotes, softer opponent in that first round game. And then, especially if they're the 5-seed, they're going to progress and get the 4, as opposed to getting, like, they wouldn't have to see they would have a chance of seeing an Oregon or a Texas type team till at least the semifinals, regardless of how this shakes out, I think.
Where they'll get smacked most.
There is potential there, yes.
So speaking of Texas, do we want to show, first of all, hook 'em horns, a great win over the little brother this past weekend. any thoughts on Texas's chance in the playoffs? They are currently ranked 2nd. Their only loss is to Georgia in a bit of an underwhelming performance, right?
Dogs.
All right. They play.
Yeah. Well, they've been really good since that game.
So. Well, they have been really good since that game. But before that, like, I, especially like kind of leading up to and like immediately following that loss, I really struggled with figuring out like what to make of them. Because I feel like a lot of their wins did not come from like extremely consistent play, like throughout a whole game. Like, I haven't watched a game where I'm like, wow, that's a national championship team right there.
Well, and it also showed in that A&M game where you know, it's not like there was a lot separating the teams, right? But you feel like if Texas was going to contend in this championship, you wanted to see a bit more of a convincing victory. And it was what, like a 1-score game for a majority of the time. It's like, you'd like to see something a little bit more.
I think this is a crazy rabbit hole I'm about to jump down, but if we were to start making NFL comps, I think I would say that Texas is kind of the Chiefs a little bit, that they're sneaking out a lot of 1-score games, and they're definitely a good team, but a lot of people are kind of having doubts, or there's a lot of questions that could be posed maybe just about like the overall consistency and quality of their play in some of those wins, even if those wins came against decent teams.
And many people do say Quinn Ewers is Patrick Mahomes. I get the comparison, really. No, obviously not. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, we'll see how Texas do. I have a couple of friends from high school who will certainly be hoping that Texas get the job done. But like Max said earlier, it's going to be a pretty equal, you know, chance at getting the chip this year. I think it's pretty even, and it's, you know, even last year where we thought it was a little bit untraditional. So I don't know, any more thoughts from the crew on the college football playoffs, maybe the format or the teams that are in it?
Well, I think it's really wide open to like whoever's gonna win, and I think honestly like there could be a lot of things that shake up after this weekend, right? Like, you could see Clemson somehow sneak in if they win the ACC championship, which would be crazy. And then like potentially, like, would we see SMU be left out? Like, that would be absolutely disrespectful. Like, it would be disgusting if that happened. I would be really mad. But
I think, like, if something like that happens, Alabama has to be the first to go, in my opinion.
But they'll never
leave. Alabama is getting in the college.
That's why it's like Alabama this year. It makes me so mad. It makes me so mad because, like, obviously they have the head-to-head win above South Carolina. But South Carolina, the last few weeks, has been phenomenal.
Yes.
Phenomenal. They've been probably a top five team in college football the last few weeks. And to not put them in because, like, oh, Bama, like, but was Bama, good 5 years ago.
Bama beat them, though. So, like, I think you have to respect the season as a whole rather, like...
Bama lost to two 6-6 teams.
But the stick with South Carolina is they're also a three-loss team. And Bama beat them. So, like, you can't just value the second half of the season.
But South Carolina's losses are a lot better than Alabama's.
Yeah,
Alabama's losses are really bad.
But Alabama has really great wins, too.
Yeah, but South Carolina are probably in better form right now. Like, they're playing better right now. You'd like to think that going into playoffs that they'd be in better shape to, you know, maybe either cause an upset or at least put in a good performance.
Well, now this is starting to sound like the Florida State conversation from last year, where it's like they were in really bad, or they're in really good, like they were in really bad form, arguably after losing their quarterback. And then, like, I mean, people are still arguing about that now. It's like, in a year, are we going to be arguing about South Carolina if they get left out? Like, I don't know.
Well, sure. But in the same way, like, what's Bama making it in as like a low seed really going to do for the, I mean, what, an extra televised game for Bama? I guess, you know, the people who make the money are going to care about that. But
well, it's less about what it does for Bama and more about what another program misses out on, I think. Like, it's like, what if, like, a, I don't know, who would that, like, what happens to a Boise or a South Carolina or an Arizona State? I'm just like looking at teams in that section that are a Clemson or like teams that section of the rankings that, like, in at least in recent years, I know Clemson's not a great example of this, but like haven't nearly had that football, like, real dynasty and like representation. Mm-hmm. That would be a huge thing for any of those programs in recent history. Whereas Bama would be like, there's Bama again.
Well, the whole argument basically is like, you cannot tell me there's not bias towards Alabama because there is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And it's just so blatantly clear. And it's honestly frustrating because, like, if it's any other team that's not named Alabama, like, that's it. They would not be in the discussion. They have two really bad losses. Really bad losses. The 6-win teams. Like, the whole argument is, like, oh, like, yeah, they have a good win. But, like...
I mean, they've beaten the future national champions. So...
future national champions.
At home.
My biggest problem with the committee is... not putting Miami above Alabama because Miami has less losses and more wins. And
but the whole thing is, like, I will say Miami doesn't have like any really good wins at all. Like, if you look at their wins, none of them is like really like, wow. Duke is not a good win. That's a crazy take.
Who is South Carolina beaten
right now?
Who's South Carolina beaten? Let me pull it up. But they've, I know for a fact they beat Clemson.
It was a great game this past weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but is that really like more like
they beat Missouri, they beat Texas A&M, they beat.
There's another one there for you. Atkins.
They lost to Alabama by two. Like, it wasn't like they got blown out. I don't know. And then like the whole argument too is like, as we're also not even mentioning Ole Miss, like. What about Ole Miss? They beat South Carolina, and Ole Miss has been really good too. Like,
I think you got to put Ole Miss and Alabama in a similar group, and I think the fact that no one's talking about Ole Miss is like the perfect example of like what we were saying a minute ago. Like, there might be a little bit of Alabama favoritism going on. I guess like another question I was just thinking about though is like, say Alabama sneaks in, and gets that 11 or that 12 spot, which we kind of seem to all agree that they will. Like, are they really good enough to like make anything happen? Like, are they going to get a Penn State or a Notre Dame just get spunked in the first round?
Absolutely not. No.
I think Alabama, if you were to put them at the 11 seed right now and put them against a Penn State or a Notre Dame, I would be taking Alabama before I took Penn State or Notre Dame.
That's really a crazy.
So
take.
What we're
defend your position, Max.
Max, like, loves the SEC. I guess.
Yeah.
Of course, the SEC is like by far the best like football conference.
Well, yeah, but it's a lot more even now.
You see it. But you see it every year, like the SEC dominates in the non-conference games, and Penn State is like so fraudulent every single year. The fact that they're ranked third still blows my mind. because they get embarrassed by the big teams consistently. And I would 100% be taking Jalen Milroe, who I know is a star, over Penn State.
That's an insane
future fourth rounder, actually. No.
I think crazier, though, is you saying Notre Dame, because they literally have one of the best defenses in the country. Alabama has done nothing. And they have, and Notre Dame has one bad loss. And after that loss, they've played phenomenal. The lights out the rest of the season. And they have big wins over LSU and A&M.
I will also say, in like defense of Penn State from a resume perspective, they have a couple questionable games. I'll give you that. But like when they've played Maryland teams, they've played Purdue teams that are bad and blown them out. They've lost to Ohio State by one score. They beat a ranked Illinois team by two scores. They beat USC before they were ranked or anyone thought USC was any good. Like the
USC is not that good.
Yeah, no, they're not. But like
this year.
But like I think it's hard to look through like the Penn State resume and find a lot more concern than you would find like this year from a few other teams of a similar caliber. I'm not saying that they're not flawed or that they're not going to turn out to be fraudulent again, but I don't think we can just be like, oh, they haven't played anyone good. They haven't done anything like notable or respectable.
I agree with that. Just like, especially considering like, right, we're talking about like Alabama and stuff like that. Like, at some point, resume does have to matter at least a little bit. And when you have
does matter. Alabama beat LSU 42-13. They shut out Missouri.
Look at their losses.
Right, well, come back when Alabama loses in the first round, buddy.
They lost to a 6-win Vanderbilt. They lost to a 6-win Oklahoma. Like, what are we doing? Like, at what point is it like, okay, like, do we not include them? Yeah. They have three losses. Like, it's not like. It's not,
but there's
like
the other teams you're trying to put in also have three losses. That like the 12 team playoff, it's just bigger. Like the three loss teams are naturally going to get in.
I don't know that that's true. I don't know that we have to say like, oh, we made the playoff bigger and now like we have to let in. Like, I think if there's this many teams that don't have three losses, like I
agree. Like, you have Miami,
Ole
10
Miss
and 2
has three losses. South Carolina has three losses.
But you don't even have.
They're
to
not
put
going
a...
to, but Georgia could potentially have three losses.
Well, yeah, like Rice has eight losses. Like,
but with how the bracket like potentially might turn out, like you look at Clemson, like if they sneak in, obviously that's a three loss team. But if they win the championship, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who are you going to leave out? You're going to leave out 11-2 SMU for Alabama. That's an insane take. You're going to leave out a 10-2 Miami for Alabama. That's an insane take. I don't know. I just, Miami has had the best offense in the country this year. They put up the most points per game in the country, and we're going to leave them out.
I guess
for Alabama.
I guess what I look
because
at
Nick
it a
Saban
differently. I look at like your like peak rather than like how bad you could be. So I'm valuing the big wins more than the bad losses. So when I look at an Alabama team, I just see them as being more capable of having those big wins because they've shown that they can have those big wins.
I guess you can do that with a star QB. But, you know, I think this takes us perfectly into our prediction segment where we will reveal a little bit later, but we will have a college football playoff spin to our prediction segment. So as we move into the weekly prediction segment, if you have not been following along, our crew here and at Against the Grain on 96.1 K True, we predict three of the hottest matchups of the week, and we have been keeping track of our predictions record throughout the year. So far, we have Andrew Fox leading us at 10-2, with Ian falling to 5-7. I did not even realize that. So,
yeah,
Ian, you've got a couple.
It's been rough going for Ian over
there. Yeah, you've got some ground to make up for sure. But how about we get started with the matchups? First off, we got the huge divisional matchup between the Packers and Lions on Thursday Night Football. Need a big performance from Josh Jacobs for my fantasy team. I'll start it off. I think it's a bad matchup for the Packers. They are a run-first team, more so this season, and I think the Lions are great at stopping the run. Give me the Lions in a close one in Detroit. Ian?
I am going to take the Lions as well. I think they have probably looked like the best team in the NFL. They have been able to do some crazy things just because they've like been up by so much and just toying with teams that have given other teams trouble at times. I have to ride with the Lions here.
I agree. I'm also with the Lions. I think because they're home, that really gives them the edge in this. If it was a road game, I think I would choose the Packers, but They're home. They're the better team. I like them in this one. Brandon?
I think they're the better team. I'm going to choose the Lions as well, Max.
Even though we're all going to end up picking the Lions, I do think this game is quite a bit more interesting than we're letting on.
Yeah, be on the lookout for a Christian Watson deep touchdown. Just want to put it out there. I think the Lions have given up a lot of big plays this year. Next matchup, even bigger one, we could argue between Max's Dogs and Hook'em Horns, Texas versus Georgia. Huge matchup in college football. I'll start it off. As much as I'd like to go with my guys in Burnt Orange, Quinn Ewers' play is making me doubt how successful they're going to be. I'm going to go with Georgia for this one. Ian?
I, against all the Husker red that I was raised on in the Big 12 of the days of yore, I am going to take the Longhorns. I think they have been the better and the more consistent team, especially in the back half of the season, and I see them eking out a close one here.
I think Georgia knows when to turn up. I think they play really well in these spots. I think they have Texas's number a little bit. I like them in this one. Brandon?
I really hate both these teams. Like, I'm not even going to lie. But I will say, the fact that a Manning possesses the ability to run a football should be illegal. And because of that, I'm going to choose Texas.
That's awesome. Awesome analysis.
You guys already know who I'm picking, but I will put it out there that Georgia will lose if Carson Beck throws 4 interceptions. But I don't think he will.
Wow. Shocker there.
Some profound analysis from our guy, Matt.
Yeah, this is what you're here for on this show. We'll close off our matchups with the Rockets and Warriors in the NBA Cup. Your Houston Rockets, led by All-Star Dylan Brooks, of course, have been looking great this season and are up against the Warriors after winning their group in the NBA Cup as they now make it to the next part of the tournament. I am going to take the Rockets, a homer pick, but Warriors have been reeling a little bit. Curry's status for the game is up in the air. I will take the Rockets. Ian?
I actually did not know before this that Curry's status was up in the air, but that does not change my pick at all because I was leaning with the Rockets. I think this is the kind of game and the kind of opponent like that they've proven that they can really step up and compete with in their hot start to the season, and I have no reason to fade them or say they won't be able to continue that. So I will ride with H-Town.
Yeah, the Warriors have been on a big slump here, 5 losses in a row, but I think that they can get a win here. I think I like the matchup. I think the Warriors bounce back.
As a specific player once said in France this past summer, Snoot Newt for the Rockets. Give me Curry and the Warriors.
Okay. All right.
I think despite some of the hate the NBA Cup has gotten, this is pretty close to playoff basketball, so I will be taking Curry and the Warriors.
That's a good take. Okay, and as we teased at the start of the segment, we will have a college football playoff spin to our prediction segment. And each of us, we're going to go around the table and choose our projected winner for the playoffs. Obviously, the bracket is not finalized yet, but we've taken a look at who's currently projected to make it and who we think is going to win. So I'll start it off. Look, I just watched that video of the Oregon coach smashing a Washington helmet in the like at halftime, and I'm riled up just thinking about it. Give me the Oregon Ducks. They're gonna bring it home. Ian.
I really don't like picking like the number one team in this kind of context. Like in March Madness, when I'm doing a bracket, I never want to take the number one overall seed. I cannot convince myself to take anyone besides Oregon. Like just looking at like what people have done all year, I look at any team outside of Oregon and I just like see some like not even just like a loss, but like something in their game that I'm like, there's no way they're going to be able to win like the three or the four in a row that they need to actually be able to take home the championship against the best of the best. So I'm going to ride with Oregon and probably eat my words.
I agree. And I think March Madness is a little bit different from the CFP. There's a lot more upsets in March Madness. I feel like in college football, like, the favorite can just win. Like, Oregon is the best team. And if I had to choose one team, I would choose Oregon. I mean, if it was Oregon versus the field, that's another conversation. But if we're just picking one team, the best bet's Oregon. So give me Oregon. Brandon?
You know, I've thought long and hard about this. But at the end of the day, defense, wins championships. And I think there's a clear one of these teams has the best defense right now. They've been playing lights out. Maybe Joe Montana makes a return as their quarterback. Give me Notre Dame.
Wow. Okay.
Gutsy call from the kid.
One of the worst takes I've heard all year. Georgia is winning the national championship.
Yeah. Crazy Georgia team that led up 40-something to Georgia Tech. Interesting. Okay. All right. That concludes our prediction segment and our show for the week. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And it was a pleasure for all of y'all to join us this semester on the inaugural season, I guess we can call it, of Against the Grain. Once again, we would like to thank y'all so much for listening to today's episode. We will be back after the break, and we will continue discussing Rice and Houston sports. Be sure to follow us on all socials at KTrue Sports, Instagram, TikTok. And in case you didn't get to hear the whole episode, amazing news. You can stream it on any platform of your choice, including Spotify and Amazon Music, as well as iHeartRadio. Please feel free to submit questions and comments to our email, ktruesports@gmail.com. And yeah, thank you all so much for listening, and have a great rest of the month.